Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Look, I'm telling you, there's something moving and it ain't us.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons.
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. Adam, you are in tech support jail and regular jail.
Yeah, it's a frequent theme across all of our shows. It's how am I made to suffer on this day?
What new slings and arrows has the universe decided to throw at Adam?
I got the great satisfaction of unplugging my computer and throwing it across the room onto the couch.
Yeah, that's fun.
I don't know if you can see it, but it's back there where I threw it.
You're going to have to angle the screen down. Hey, wow, yeah, that's a tossed computer.
Yeah, got it tossed over there, tossed some peripherals over there. It's useless.
Yeah, you're not going to need that thing.
Nope.
Man.
A drill is too good for it. I should just fucking break it over my knee and throw it in the trash.
Come on, you little fucker, let's go.
But aren't you getting like a pretty good return rate from that like computer recycling company?
I am, but as a degenerate gambler, I really have no respect or idea about the worth of money. So like it would be fucking worth it to me to piss on it and throw it in the street.
Mm-hmm. We need to do like an Office Space slow-mo montage of its destruction. I find it curious that humans place emotions on inanimate objects.
Does it work this way in your house where everything just gets obsolete at the same time? Like, shit is just going down across the board for me.
Man.
My toilet, my remote controls, my TV in my bedroom.
Yeah, you've been having TV problems.
It's just all of it. It's all of it all at once. It's everything everywhere all at once.
A bagel.
There's a multiverse in which Adam has all the technology stuff completely running smoothly.
I would go there in a heartbeat, Ben. I would leave you and this and all of it behind in a second to go to that one.
Wow.
But, I mean, I say that hoping that you would be there to greet me in that other multiverse, right?
In that multiverse, I'm the one that's having my computer rage at me.
Oh, see, like, now you're tapping into my martyr complex. I couldn't allow that. I'd have to eat all this shit myself. I couldn't have you do it.
Yeah, whenever we do feats of strength on tour, Adam insists on eating the entire plate of shit by himself.
Yeah. Be it shit or crow or myriad other emotional food products.
I don't know if this means anything, but we both have replacement computers coming because we're both on machines that are not quite up to the challenge of the job that we have.
You've got a pre-thrown machine, though.
Yeah, mine remains unthrown.
Do you need me to come over and throw it? Because I will, Ben. I fucking will.
Are you proposing some kind of Game of Thrones?
I mean, you've seen me throw things off of your stage. I would like nothing more than to throw more things off of your stage.
Man, if we live stream it, then we can call it a tax write-off. And then the monetary downsides of destroying these computers don't accrue to us.
That's right.
They accrue to the taxpayer.
Hmm. Yeah. Where it belongs.
What I was going to say, though, Adam, is we each ordered a computer. I think we ordered identical computers.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a charge show up on my credit card for, I think, the computer today. And I don't know if that means it shipped or if they just charged it and they're going to ship it in a month. Like, because my estimated date of arrival has not updated, but I don't know why they would charge me otherwise. But anyway,
remember what it was like to like buy concert tickets and you refresh the screen at the time. You're like refreshing. Like, when can I get in there?
I mean, I would never buy tickets to a concert, but I've heard tell of this.
I'm doing that with our computers. I'm doing it all the time. I'm refreshing that screen and it's still telling me that they're going to be here in a month.
What I'm saying, Adam, is that since I remain unthroned, you've dethroned me.
I've never seen Game of Thrones. Do I need to have seen it to understand where this is going?
No, you don't need to watch that garbage.
Okay.
But if one shows up and it shows up to my house, I'm driving it directly over to you because I don't like seeing that face down fallen soldier, that that defeated samurai on your couch over there. I didn't know that a computer could have its bangs fall across its face like that.
I didn't know my computer was growing hair until I saw the back of it. And look at that thing.
Yeah. Wow.
It's a furry pelt.
It must have been listening to advertisements on podcasts for hair regrow pill websites.
Oh, yeah. I've been cramming its holes full of Roman.
Maybe that's why it's not working so great.
You think that's what it is?
You know, just a theory.
Is that why the smoke smells so weird coming out of it? Is that why I'm so ragey all the time?
Could be.
I've been freebasing Roman, Ben.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to do that.
Maybe one of the many reasons your wife chooses never to enter the room that you are in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. We're on the second week of sleeping in the office.
Yeah.
Another factor in, as I gesture around, this whole thing that's going on.
Are you sleeping better at least? Like, are you?
Yeah, I think I am.
Hotel bed sleeping?
Yeah, I think I can say that.
So there's some positive.
That there is some sunshine there, Ben. You're right.
Yeah.
That is on the plus side. I am sleeping better.
I want you to hold on to that and put all the other stuff out of your mind and just totally wrap your arms around. Man, I am sleeping great right now.
All right. I can do it. There's one good thing.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ben.
Because listen, man, today's episode of Star Trek Strange New Worlds is a fucking bummer.
Yeah.
And I need you to be in a slightly less apocalyptic mood to go through it with me.
I'm ready to go through it with you, Ben.
All right.
It's not too bleak for me.
All right.
All right, I'm in.
It's season 1, episode 9, All Those Who Wander.
We get an Uhura's log to start things off, and it really feels like it's her last ride.
It does. She has been shrunk down in Honey, I Shrunk the Kid style death ray, but she's on the table among bagels and fresh fruit and... Looks like there's some tomatoes there, maybe some lox with cucumbers cut up on it. She's real little.
If you're on this crew and you don't like Pike's cooking, you're in real trouble.
Ooh, you're fucked. Yeah.
Could you imagine? Like, I wonder when we're going to get that storyline. Like the senior staff crew person who has been keeping it a secret all along that that they do not like Pike's cooking and they are just choking it down.
Yeah. There's a small subsection of the population that has a genetic difference that makes cilantro taste terrible to them.
Mm-hmm.
Our friend Chris Bowman of the Let's Drink About It podcast, a member of this group. I have always wondered what it's like if you grow up in like Thailand or Mexico and you have the cilantro taste bad to me, Gene.
I mean, you're just hamburger person at that point.
Yeah, you're just like, I only like American food.
I wonder to what extent that is less statistically probable in countries where the cilantro is abundant, you know?
Yeah, maybe it's less statistically probable that you're the kind of crew person that hates Pike's cooking if you get stationed on the flagship.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, it's a going away party of sorts. I love this. Like,
yeah.
You ever go back when you worked in an office, you ever go to like someone's birthday party that was also like a shared occasion for something else and you feel a little bit bad that the shine was shared? Like that's what this is, because Cadet Gia and Uhura are there to be celebrated as departing cadets, but Ensign Duke is getting pipped to lieutenant in this very same party.
I know.
Ensign Duke, front and center.
It does seem like maybe that should be a separate function, you know?
Gotta say, Ensign Duke as a name, great name.
It's a good name. I didn't like that after Ensign Lance, they had another kind of throwaway Ensign character on the show, but he didn't look anything like one of your favorite podcasters.
Let me tell you something, Ben. I am very glad that Ensign Lance stayed far, far away from this episode and this mission. Keep him safe.
But wouldn't you like to see him get a promotion?
I want to see him live. Live, damn it. Live to see the next episode, Ensign Lance. He's too beautiful to die.
Yeah. This mission that they're on while they're having this celebration is to drop some Vidian power cells off at Space Station K7. I was immediately really worried about the people of K7. Are they sick? Are their organs falling apart? Do they need to steal other people's organs to make themselves stay alive?
Yeah, a confusing piece of terminology here that also had me shook.
If I ever encounter your kind again.
Uhura has a little conversation with Ortegas. She talks about, parties not being really her thing. I feel like Ortegas is kind of just like, you know, there's a required amount of fun that you're supposed to have at parties. It's in the rule book for Starfleet.
I mean, Ortegas is doing a great thing here because she recognizes Uhura is alone and awkward. But also, like, Uhura needs a party buddy.
Yeah.
A party wingman or wingwoman or wing person. Like, it's what makes any party better for the socially anxious, you know?
Yeah, it's a big help to those of us in the socially anxious community. And
or just a great big gummy, Uhura. Like, turn away from camera.
My assignment to Enterprise is over.
Throw that thing down the hatch.
Instead, she gets a one-on-one with the captain, which I feel like is maybe more intense than having a party buddy.
It would be with your standard issue captain, but Captain Dad is there to give maybe the ultimate parental style safety net. Like, look, kiddo, like, we're gonna miss you tons when you go off to college or whatever, but you can always come home is the message. And that is a really nice thing to hear.
Yeah. I did see Cadet Chia, the other person that's been on rotations on The Entrepreneur, like looking at this from across the room with rage and jealousy in her eyes. God fucking damn it. She can come back whenever she wants. What am I, chopped liver? I've been doing the rotations. I made an impact. I'm Cadet Chia, goddammit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember any of Cadet Chia's exploits. And I was looking very closely to see if any would happen in this episode. And I think if you got to pick one, Pike chose the right one to extend this courtesy to.
They get word that there is a Priority One message coming in from Starfleet. They're going to be changing missions mid-flight. And Pike clears out the party and wants everybody from his senior staff to join him in his quarters.
Right.
There's some pushback about Laan joining, though, because Laan is on some kind of personal / medical break.
It's with Dr. Sanchez again, head shrinker.
Right, but this is a mission important enough to recall her from whatever that is. And when she arrives, the food has not been put away.
Yeah.
I mean, these brunch hours go for what, like between 4 and 6 hours?
Right.
You can still get in there if you want.
Yeah. They knew she was coming, so they saved a plate. I love it when people save a plate.
You're going to want to try the omelet and the bacon.
And the waffle.
The continuity of Mbanga loving waffles is a thing that I just fucking love. It is almost the main thing about Mbanga.
Yeah. I got some frozen toaster waffles this weekend in honor of Mbanga.
About that. I haven't had a toaster waffle in a long time, but I used to live off of those guys.
You know what my wife did, which I've never seen before? She took it out of the toaster, got cream cheese out of the fridge, and spread cream cheese into all of the waffle sockets.
Into the hose.
Into the hose.
Oh.
And then ate it unsweetened. She just ate it with cream cheese.
Do you write that off as a pregnant person's taste interest, or is that just how she does it?
Neither of us had a toaster waffle in each other's presence. Like, that is how long it's been since either of us had a toaster waffle. And she's like, this is how I always eat them.
Nice that a long-term relationship can still surprise each other.
Yeah, this is how we keep it spicy. Going to the fucking grocery store and getting Eggo.
Eggo won the waffle wars, didn't they? Do you remember, like, in my household, we didn't eat Eggo. We got the red plastic bag of square waffles. Do you remember those?
Oh, I don't think I know about square waffles.
And they came in tiles, basically. Tiles of four.
Oh, and you have to break it off?
You'd open up the bag, and it's like a bread bag, basically, with a little twist tie. You open them up, and you break off a couple, and you throw them in the toaster. And because they were square, I don't know, it feels like you got a little more waffle for your money there.
Yeah, yeah. It's better for shipping, for sure.
Yeah. You get some dry edges and some moist inners, and oh boy, you just get the whole textural landscape there. Wow. Those are great waffles, but I don't think you can find them anymore. I think Eggo won. Then now Eggo's all you can get.
RSVP square waffle.
Yeah, I miss those square waffles. I would not put cream cheese on a waffle, though.
Yeah.
Without syrup, is what I'm saying.
Extra syrup.
I like cream cheese and jelly. You ever do that?
Whoa. I do that on a bagel. I took a bite. I didn't dislike it. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that on a bagel, too.
A bagel.
Well, this meeting is all about the kind of conundrum of this mission, because these Vidian power cells are going to end of life if they go divert and go do something else. So that's one consideration. But the other consideration is there's this starship, the USS Peregrine. It crashed on a L-class planet, Vallejo Beta 5. I don't know why they couldn't have gone with Vallejo Epsilon 40 in honor of Vallejo's native son, E-40, 40 Fonzarelli, greatest rapper alive.
Just let me know when you want me to come back.
But they call it Beta 5, and they say that this is, I couldn't quite make it out. Was it a Somber class ship that they said it is?
I mean, I heard Somber, and I don't know if I want to be assigned to a Somber class ship. I want to be assigned to a brunch class ship like Pike's here.
Yeah, yeah. It seems much more fun.
Yeah.
Oh my God, this is delicious.
Told you.
But yeah, it's built out of the same stuff as a Constitution class, and it's very fast. But if they divert to go rescue this ship and its crew, the power cells will be junk, and that means that Station K7... will die because they need these power cells to live.
Without them, the whole space station goes dark.
Including life support.
Did you get the sense that because the Somber class ship could slowly and sadly descend to a planet surface whenever it wanted to, that the Connie could also do that? The Entrepreneur class ship could also make landfall, if you will?
Yeah. What did they call that in Voyager? Blue Alert? When they go to...
Yeah.
Landing on a planet mode.
Commander Tuvok to all hands. Go to Blue Alert and report to Code Blue stations.
There's a color for every occasion.
Yeah.
Anyway, it got me curious.
Yeah. Would like to see if they ever give it a try.
Let us down easy, Commander.
You know what else I'm curious about, Ben? They're serving bacon at brunch.
Mm-hmm.
Did that bump you a little bit? You think that's real bacon? Think it's got to be real bacon.
I might be shit bacon.
It's pretty good for shit.
You know what that means. I don't think there are any Jewish people on the senior staff of the Entrepreneur.
What?
Yikes.
Now I'm against this show.
Yikes. Suki.
Yeah, yeah. If we get to interview anybody from the production staff of this, we're really going to take the wood to them.
A big wooden cross.
The plan is to split up. That's what they agree to in the room, right?
Yeah.
I advise we send a landing party. Meanwhile, Enterprise can continue on to deliver the Vidium.
This is La'an's idea.
La'an is like, I'm going to take this show off. I'm taking Ortega's with me. And you're not going to see us again until the end because Pike gets everyone else. Like if they're choosing dodgeball teams or whatever,
yeah.
Pike gets everyone.
Right.
Yeah, so yeah, number one is going to do the K7 mission. Could be its own episode for all we know.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of love the idea of an Una and Ortega just have a great ass time at Station K7 episode.
Girls trip, girls trip.
Pike's sitting at the mission jukebox. He's like, K7.
You just hit K8.
If you like pina colada.
And that's why she ends up cruising along that station to deliver batteries.
Yeah, that sucks. Pike immediately pivots into doing station wagon bits. I started taking notes at this part of the episode. Feel like I'm going to need to know some station wagon bits.
Oh, wow.
Just for my future.
Uh-huh.
Chances are.
Yeah, I mean, a shuttlecraft is really the family truckster of conveyances in Star Trek, right?
Yeah. It super is.
It's the people mover.
And they cut right to a pair of them, like transitioning from space to planet surface at planet Vallejo Beta 5. Wow, what an experience this was.
Yeah, pretty rocky road down to the surface and a really great reveal. Like in the room, you hear how similar the Peregrine is to the Entrepreneur in design, but until you see this ship crashed on the surface.
Yeah.
Wow. Pretty breathtaking sight.
This is, I mean, we've talked about it all through this season, just best in breed special effects. It just looks so cool. It's so exciting. Like the shuttles are like making really close passes at these craggy, snowy mountain peaks, and their ability to do away missions where you see all of the like environmental stuff that's going on around them. And it doesn't just look like a Sears Garden Center or a bunch of foam rocks. It's fucking amazing.
New Star Trek really seems to be into ice planet.
Yeah.
As a location for away teams. And it made me think about how obvious that must be. Like, most planets have got to be ice planets, right?
Yeah. They're either gas giants or ice planets.
Which means if you're landing on one, it's going to be an ice planet most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it.
I do too. This place is cold and dark and Hammer loves it. He's not wearing stocking cap or gloves.
No.
He loves this shit.
He like pulls his shirt up over his head and starts winging it around over it. He loves it.
Reminds me of Andoria.
I mean, if Ortegas was there, she'd be peeping the bare midriff of Hammer walking through the icy wind.
Whatever tweaks your freak, pal.
Hey, if we ever get podshop.biz back up and running, we should have an Ortegas-themed midriff shirt.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like fun.
What would we call that?
I mean, we'd have to call it the Ortegas, right?
Yeah.
What else could it be?
The Erica?
Yeah. I mean, when I think of Erica, I'm thinking of Red Dawn.
Yeah. Oh, man. Is that what it is? It's our infamous Red Dawn Erica shirt.
We're bringing it back as a midriff.
But this time it's Ortegas's face.
I have not worn my Erica shirt since ex-producer Robs was caught with the Erica as his lock screen on his phone. And
yeah.
And a Lyft driver took great umbrage of seeing that.
Yeah. It's a going to sleep only kind of shirt.
Yeah. Producer Emeritus Robs.
It's like being in the Marines. Once you've been an Uxbridge Shimoda person.
Yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera.
He spilled some laughs in the same mud.
So they walk up to this starship and they're not getting life signs per se.
If you had to always call a person by their correct rank and name, under penalty of drinking, I would be smashed every day on Star Trek.
Starfleet tradition.
Yeah.
Because Spock does that thing where he calls Duke ensign instead of lieutenant, and he fucks around with the rank and he finds out.
It's unfair because he's in an away team outfit that doesn't have an obvious rank insignia on it.
You can't see the pips.
Yeah, that's all covered up right now by the leather jacket.
The jacket!
Covering it up by the jacket! They do kind of look like a motorcycle gang, like walking around in their black leather jackets.
They really do.
With their fucking motorcycle goggles on.
I wonder how little of the sound they use for the walking around, because it's all squeaky and leathery when they're in motion.
Yeah.
They're all looping this later. Give us the leather cut.
Man, this is going to be a hike.
Geothermal anomalies have forced us to land several kilometers from the peregrine. We're pussy. This area is highly volatile.
Man, that makes me wonder if the jackets are made out of something that just looks like leather on camera. You know how, like, grocery bags in movies are made out of vinyl? Like, it's vinyl that looks like brown paper?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so that it doesn't crinkle.
Give me some of those vinyl bags.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
I mean, a prop department shopping bag would be a very fun thing to have.
Really would.
But, yeah, so... That's my idea of fun.
La'an finds what I thought. I watched this over and over again. I thought it was a severed arm. Is it a severed arm sticking out of the snow, or is it a whole body that is like just showing arm?
I think it's a Vori that's turned face down, and you only see their arm in front there.
Keep your top low and your glimpse wide.
I thought I glimpsed just the arm.
Yeah, I think that that person just went into the hereafter.
Yeah, we get bloody arm to theme. One of the rare, it's kind of a tone setter, isn't it? Like, for the gore we haven't really gotten much of.
Yeah.
This season.
Absolutely is.
If you can't get with the arm,
yeah,
you need to get off the ride now.
Yeah. If that's upsetting to you, the rest of the episode is really going to fuck your shit up.
A xenomorph may be involved.
Excuse me, sir. A what?
A xenomorph.
After the theme, we're inside the Peregrine when the Dustbuster Club enters, and they are weapons out.
Yeah, and they discover that the crew of the Peregrine pursued a ship decoration theme of blood. It's everywhere.
Right.
Captain, there is more blood over here as well.
The ship is cold, it's dark, it's covered in blood. You know what that means.
The ship is fucked.
It's a tomb.
All of the command controls have been sent to engineering. So it's a bit of a mystery also. Like, why would they do that? What was going on? What were they trying to accomplish?
The working hypothesis at this point is that the crew left the ship for some reason and got caught out in a storm and couldn't find their way back. But that doesn't really explain, and I'm gesturing wildly, all of the blood inside the ship.
Why did they leave the blood and then go out? Yeah.
They will definitely know that we left the ship and got caught out by all of the blood.
La'an reports that there's lots of bodies out there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Kirk and Cadet Chia and a few others discover even more bodies out there. There are just so many bodies.
I really love the Bill Paxton energy that Sam Kirk brings to all of his scenes.
Yeah.
Now what the fuck are we supposed to do? We're some real pretty shit now, man.
I really dig his whole deal.
Mm-hmm.
He seems very different from everyone else. In personality.
The game does appear to be over, man.
Yeah.
And they get captain's log, final log left by the captain.
That's a great point, Ben. You're going to need a Bill Paxton type of energy for an episode like this.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can't get him, so you get Sam Kirk.
Yeah, that's Hudson, sir. I'm Hicks.
The captain's log is pretty haunting here.
Yeah.
It's a, like, hey, so we accidentally sent that distress call, and if I could do it over, I would send a don't come and rescue us call.
This is low-key one of my favorite moments, because in stories like this, I love the log that they find, the diary or whatever, like,
yeah,
with the last page almost unfinished.
Drums.
And this log is chilling.
Drums in the deep.
She describes three castaways that they found on the surface, a human girl, an Orion, and an unknown humanoid. And the end of the log is basically like, well, if you're hearing this, I'm dead, and you completely fucked up by coming to look after me.
Stay away. Don't come to Vallejo Beta 5.
A little late for that, isn't it?
The story she tells is wild. Like, the Orion was infected with Gorn eggs and ate a grenade.
Yeah.
In engineering.
Mm.
Hey, Pasco, buddy, why don't you take that outside?
Yeah.
no eating grenades in engineering.
Couldn't they have, like, beamed him into outer space?
You should not be allowed to pull the pin on an unauthorized grenade in a Federation starship, right?
I mean, it'd be really impressive to see a grenade just blow the pot away from some mashed potatoes. Usually they're not that precise.
Yeah, I know. But, like, really, it's a story for the mind, right? Like, you think about this. Oof.
Yeah.
It's scary.
And as they make their way through the ship, it's just more bodies, more blood, cargo pods strewn throughout the hallways.
Yeah.
It's dark. You know, main power is off.
No water?
This place is a dump.
Yeah, but wait till you see the pool, Adam. Then they find this unknown humanoid mentioned in the captain's log, and it's a blue bunny.
Yeah, he's speaking a kind of hut language that I really enjoyed. And he's got a cattle prod spear on him, too.
He does.
So he's a little bit scary in this scene.
He'd be right at home at a Klingon's Day of Ascension
right.
with that thing.
I love how La'an is like, well, Uhura, do that thing you do.
Translate universally.
Yeah. But really, the universal language of peace is laying down your weapons, right? And this is what Uhura encourages the group to do. And once they do that, they are allowed inside the door this blue hut was protecting. And inside, they find a little girl.
Yeah.
My name's Newt.
I want to just call out the blue bunny rabbit man's face as being just an incredibly impressive puppet. It's really expressive and seemed to have like kind of an amazing amount of articulation for a character that dies in this episode.
I felt the same way, and not just for this scene, but the scene that comes later. I was very surprised to feel moved by his expressions.
Yeah, they did a great job with this guy.
Yeah.
So this little girl is named Ariana, and she named the blue guy Buckley, but nobody understands Buckley.
No.
There's a scene in the Peregrine Six Bay where Nurse Chapel is kind of poking the Vulcan bear, asking Spock what he's like when he's mad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you wouldn't like him when he's angry. It's basically the vibe I'm getting.
The reason Spock is there is because Lieutenant Duke took a fall, and Spock is there to get some bandages or something.
Yeah.
Seems like a flimsy excuse to go see what Chapel's up to, Spock.
I don't know. The guy burned himself really badly at him. I wouldn't call that an excuse.
I mean, that's a burn in Spock's favor. Hey, hold on. I'll go to Six Bay. You stay right here, Duke.
I'm just mad that they split Ortegas and Chapel up. Like, I feel like this episode would be so much more interesting if they had some scenes together.
Yeah, but that is not a thing that the show is pursuing. So I don't know why they would do that. Yeah.
It's not, huh?
No.
Polls on the internet would say otherwise.
They have a little mini conversation here about getting angry, and specifically the utility of anger. Like, you can use it to throw a computer across a room if you want.
Yeah.
Make yourself feel better.
You can get back into the mood to make a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's good to get mad sometimes.
Chapel sees the utility in it. Spock, in this moment, does not.
Yeah.
Before heading out the door.
Down in engineering, Hemmer and Uhura are going to start working on booting the ship back up. And Uhura's theme in this episode is, what is she going to do after Starfleet? And Hemmer starts the process of kind of talking to her about why she doesn't necessarily think Starfleet is the end of the road for her.
Hemmer is kind of magical because he's got that, you know what your problem is, energy. Without being, you know what your problem is, guy, you know?
It's a gift.
Yeah.
I like him a lot, and I hope he sticks around forever.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we've seen Lower Decks. We know what's possible.
People tend to find their way back around in Starfleet.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully Hemmer kills his dad and returns to life.
Once you know, you can never go back to being the man you were before.
Works for me. Tell me.
Up in Six Bay, La'an, I mean, she always plays bad cop. No such thing as a good cop, but she always bad cops. And she's bad copping Ariana.
right.
about, you know, what's going on here? Where did the Gorns go? What's the status? W/R/T Gorns. It seems like everybody's dead, so it must be the Gorns, and you're the only person alive, so you need to tell me.
Mm-hmm.
And Mbenga has a interesting slip up here where he gets in between Lieutenant Nguyen Singh and refers to Ariana as his daughter.
I heard him refer to his daughter as Waffles, which was a very telling slip of the tongue.
Hmm, Freudian.
Mbenga, you got to pack some protein bars or something.
Yeah, you're getting hangry.
On these away missions.
But also, like, hey, maybe you could help this girl instead of, like, making the trauma of this experience even worse for her.
Yeah.
Nice suggestion by him.
Yeah, but weird because, like, they both fucked up in different ways in front of this new character.
True.
Pike tells La'an that the ship is clean. And La'an tells Pike that the three people that the Peregrine picked up were likely refugees from a Gorn's breeding planet.
Yeah.
And it means that there's most likely only one Gorn's left because that's how they operate, right? Like, a bunch of Gorns can be in a place, but they're always going to be fighting each other for top Gorns.
Mm-hmm. It seems like the last season of America's Next Top Gorn has come to a conclusion, but they're casting for the next season by being here.
Yeah. Even one Gorn's in this situation is extremely dangerous, and this is something that La'an makes crystal clear.
Stay frosty and alert. Can't afford to let one of those bastards in here.
As this is clarified, we cut down to Spock, who is by himself in a creepy hallway. I guess he's looking for Lieutenant Duke at this point.
I guess, but the way I saw this scene is was like he just kind of heard a rustling and went to investigate.
Yeah.
He can't leave a rustling unchecked.
Yeah. That hole that that rustling is coming from has like a stream of blood leading up to it, but it seemed too small for a person to go through.
This sequence especially really felt like Resident Evil to me. Like when we're just following flashlight beams and it's just trails of blood.
Yeah.
It's tough.
And then weirdly, there's a red garnet. Like, why is that the currency in this game?
There's like an interstitial scene of a door into another compartment opening.
Yeah, yeah. So back in Six Bay. So much of this episode takes place in Six Bay. It doesn't really feel like a Six Bay episode, but it really revolves around that part of the USS Peregrine.
This is a redress of all of the entrepreneur sets.
Yeah.
And yet they feel totally distinct and weird and scary.
Totally.
I mean, and it's not just because of the lighting, like you're Dutch angling all of these compositions and they're just a mess everywhere. Like over on our hit Star Trek podcast, The Greatest Generation, where we have at this moment in time just recapped Year of Hell.
Yeah.
And one of the qualities to those episodes was just how fucking messed up all the sets got. And when I watched this episode, I couldn't help but feel the same. Like the episode before this, they dressed everything in trees.
Yeah.
And like made things look like castles and whatnot. And this is.
And they didn't leave any of that stuff up.
It's a different kind of mess, but it's no less challenging.
Also challenging is the selling of a puppet character like this blue guy.
Yeah.
Buckley. And this is an amazing performance by a puppet because Buckley is sick. They, you know, find like goo and swollen veins under Buckley's clothing. And
hey, this would be a good category for the Larkin Awards for Strange New Worlds. Best performance by a puppet.
Yeah.
In a guest role.
Yeah, it's wheezing. It's really bad. And Ariana is watching all this and knows what to do. But Cadet Chia is not clued in. And Ariana doesn't like tap her on the shoulder and say like, hey, you might want to like curl up in a corner and cover your mouth to muffle the screams.
No, instead she newts and goes around a corner to wait for what's going to happen.
Yeah. Speaking of newt, this scene with Nurse Chapel, like, hiding just felt straight out of Aliens.
Yeah.
Because this guy has Gorn babies inside of him and they burst out, hello my baby, etc., etc.
I like how they pop out in both directions.
Yeah. Two of them that come out at the same time, like, immediately turn on each other, too. Which is, like, I mean, like, this is obviously homage slash, you know, warmed over alien stuff. But the idea that two aliens could come out of you and then fight each other is a creepy twist on an old classic.
Yeah, I love this.
Check, please.
Squarespace. Got to build yourself a website if you want to stand out online. Social media websites are not cutting it anymore, and you really can't tell your story, tell the story of what you do, and sell your products or services or time effectively without a really great looking website. Squarespace is the way to do it. Using Squarespace Blueprint, you can choose from professionally curated layout and styling options. You make a seamless checkout option for your customers. You can accept PayPal, Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. Amazing. So head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/trek to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
What? What? What?
Sounds like nonsense.
What is going on?
Speaking of credible puppets, like this sequence here where they fight each other looks plausible.
Yeah, I think it's a mixture of practical puppets and CG, and it's really well done.
Yeah, it cuts together great.
Nurse Chapel is up on a bio bed and makes like a force field around her to protect herself. It is fucking terrifying.
This is a visual language of Lady Afraid of Mouse, though.
Yeah.
In a way that I didn't love.
Well.
I mean, I'm as horrified and as scared as Chapel is, but I wish there was a way to depict that that wasn't exactly that.
Quite so Victorian.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I would be up on that bio bed.
Sure.
And we know Nurse Chapel's a badass. We saw what she did to all those pirates.
I mean, she is a badass, but this is a threat that diminishes her, I think, in a big way.
You can't hypospray a Gorn baby.
You really can't. I'd love to see her try, but I don't think it's going to break that way.
Mm-hmm. Spaffle would never happen for you if she tried, Adam.
Yeah.
So we see in the angled Jeffrey's tube, Lieutenant Duke get his bad burn treated by Spock. It wasn't just an excuse, Adam. He really was burned. He almost lost the arm.
Yeah, but I mean, anyone could have gone to the six bay for those supplies. I think Spock was overly enthusiastic about going.
I don't think anybody else was with him. He almost lost his damn arm, Adam. He couldn't move.
Well, he's going to wish all he lost was his arm, because this is the scene where a Gorns grabs Duke.
We get the POV.
Yeah. And he gets dragged away
mm-hmm.
in a terrifying moment. Duke would trade the arm in this scene, right? Like, just take the arm and leave me.
That day, Lieutenant Duke's gold shirt was turned red.
Yeah! Ooh. You know whose uniform I really wanted to see red at the end of the episode was Chapel's whites. But that doesn't happen.
No, yeah, she maintains her cleanliness throughout.
Yeah.
There is a very scary scene where she like cuts the force field and then gets back off the bio bed.
Yeah.
And is like not sure where the Gorn babies went.
Mm-hmm.
And she's alone. She's again alone in a dangerous starship. She keeps finding herself in this predicament.
Right. La'an finds her before too long and gives Chapel a weapon before they go off to find the girl.
Watch the ceilings, shoot anything that moves.
I can handle myself.
Yeah, I noticed.
One thing I wanted La'an to say is like, why didn't you radio us when the Gorn babies came out to this man?
Yeah.
Somebody should have radioed. Like everybody else has been walking around the ship with their dick in their hand, unawares that there's Gorn babies running around now.
La'an is a huge badass with experience against the Gorns. And from here on out, I was irritated at how little she was willing to divulge about the details that she knew would be useful to everyone, you know?
Yeah. It feels like she's like withholding for dramatic tension and not because of anything else.
Right. The big takeaway from this scene when they find Ariana is that, you know, smart girl, clever girl, she seeked out the coldest compartment on the ship because she knows that Gorns hate the cold.
Yeah.
They're sort of anti-hemmers that way.
True. So there's three Gorn babies running around. They need to get the fuck out of here. But, you know, who knows how they're going to find them or what they're going to do. This is a great moment to turn all the power on. And that's what Hemra and Uhura do.
Yeah.
Let's warm this place up. Let's get the heaters going.
Team Hemura strikes again, huh?
But you know how it is when you turn on your heating system for the first time that season and it kind of burns off all the dust?
Yeah.
There's kind of a smell to it if you haven't run your HVAC in a while.
Very specific smell to that, yeah.
What Hemra smells here is the smell of human blood on the radiator. And it's a pretty bad sign. I love a reference to smell, though, because we never get that in science fiction in the way that I feel like would be real satisfying and really like complete the scene and how it feels to be there.
If you and I ever ran a writer's room for the Star Trek industrial complex, up on the big cork board, there would be a sign that says, "What does it smell like?"
Yeah. What's that smell? For sure. Sam Kirk is falling apart in Six Bay, and Spock, Pike, and Mbenga are like, what are we going to do about this guy? He may, in fact, be a liability.
I could give him a sedative.
He is really losing his cool.
Pike's like, you know what'll make him feel better? One of my famous speeches. But he doesn't get on the 1MC to do a speech. Instead, he's on the radio recalling everyone to Six Bay. But here's the thing, like, if I'm elsewhere on the ship and I hear my captain's voice telling me to go to a place, I would like the full picture. I would like to know if there are Gorns out there. But he doesn't say that.
Yeah, let me know like what I might encounter along the way to Six Bay.
Check my six? Insufficient, Pike. I'm always checking my six.
And if any goo gets spat on your neck, wipe it off before you come to Six Bay.
Right. I mean, before Hemmer or Uhura can even, like, they didn't even get to the end of Pike's appeal on the radio before this Gorns drops in and, like, crushes a baby Gorns like a fucking cigarette butt. And then rockets some hot venom at Hemmer's neck.
So was that the Gorns that was born before and this is one of the babies that came out of the blue guy? Or is one of the babies that came out of the blue guy gotten big?
This is the OG, I feel like, the original Gorns that was on the ship back when they thought there was one.
Right.
Predates the baby Gorns that were born, and now he's off establishing superiority over the baby Gorns.
It's interesting. Gorns are one of the few examples in nature that one is not none.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I really want a Gorns hard drive.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Make me feel better about my information security.
Yeah, then you can toss it across the room all you want.
Yeah. Don't touch my hard drive. It'll spit venom at you.
In Six Bay, they're talking about how they were not able to detect these Gorns. They're genetic chameleons. They don't show up on sensors. I mean, they're very clever.
Yeah. The eggs hatch at different intervals depending on the host that they're inside.
Yeah. And that stuff that they spit, It burns.
Right.
It burns real bad.
Hemmer can't use his psionics against these guys either, which is another important detail here. Like, none of their ideas will work against them.
This is just more confirmation that Sam Kirk needs to completely fly off at the handle and act like Bones McCoy.
Right.
He like really flips out on Spock. Like, you're not sad enough that Lieutenant Duke died in front of you. Spock is like, maybe if he was a gangly glasses man, I would feel worse about it.
Sam Kirk exists outside of rank in a useful way for a scene like this, you know?
Yeah.
I think ordinarily he wouldn't just be told to shut the fuck up. He would be like...
like lashed to the mast. And whipped for his insubordination.
Yeah, but they can't really treat him like that.
He's doing that shit in front of the captain. Why?
He kind of burns himself out, too. Like, tirade done. Let's get back to the status report.
Yeah.
And the status is, I mean, everything on the ship is just about buttoned up. They just need to kill these Gorns before they can leave.
There's two left. They're not working together. That's one thing that Noonien Singh is very emphatic about. They're going to be trying to figure out who is the dominant Gorn. And they also hate the cold. So that's enough to come up with a trap. And I did have one problem with this scene, was that she's like, they're super duper intelligent, even at this age. Also, they run away from the cold and they're going to fight each other. And I'm like, it sounds like they're mostly instinct-based.
Right.
Based on those two other things.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like they're really galaxy braining, like, hey, if we just work together, these guys are done.
I mean, but that's the downside to a hypothesis based on incomplete information, right? Like, they only know what they know.
Yeah.
And they can only take action based on what they know.
True.
This is the only idea they've got.
So they're going to chill the ship down and force the Gorns into kind of a pathway and set a trap. And so there's kind of a montage of the different teams as they work toward this goal.
Right. On the bridge, Pike and Mbanga and Ariana arrive. And this is a scene where Pike transfers all the controls to this part of the ship. And Pike's code is made to sound idiotic, according to Mbanga. But my theory presupposes that in Star Trek, there's like... six-factor authentication, and the number is probably the fucking, like, the least concerning. Like, I would want an easy-to-remember number in an instance like this, because you're pulling my fingerprints and my iris and my voice and everything else.
Yeah, you're sending a text to my communicator, and you have to put that number in also.
I'm not going to need a number I can't remember that's, like, 40 characters long with symbols and shit.
That's good for Lieutenant Commander Data, but most of us are just human.
Yeah. Anyway, Pike, I like this code. I hope you keep it.
Yeah. Good code. Solid code. I don't forget how the code goes.
2, 4, 6, 8, 10.
Yeah. Good. Done.
Not bad for a human.
Yeah. So everybody's kind of like talking through the themes of their episode as they work through this. I love that Noonien Singh's like, basically thrilled that this is what they're doing. She's like,
trust me, there's nothing I'd rather be doing right now than fighting back against the Gorn.
I live for this shit!
I really love the restraint of this episode as it pertains to the cadets' last ride with the entrepreneur crew, right? Like, you never get a hurrah going, like, God, my last mission. I got to go out like this.
Yeah.
Like, there's no Danny Glovering of I'm too old for this shit, or like it's the day before retirement, or any of the other like tropes that you get a bunch.
There's no Clerks, I wasn't even supposed to be here today.
Yeah, exactly. And I like that.
I do too. And Uhura is kind of the bait in this plan. She's going to be the one that attracts the Gorns. We get some more puppetry here, and the adolescent Gorn puppet really reminded me of a gremlin.
I really got those vibes too. Yeah.
It's like a combination between like an alien xenomorph, a gremlin, and a predator, because it's got predator cam.
It moves around kind of like a cricket too, like with its shoulder blades and rear legs. It's an interesting combination of all those things.
It really is. And the way they attract the Gorns is always by attacking them. They're attracted to aggression. So she's able to get it chasing her. They chill out the transporter bay and slam the door. And that means that it's now going to go through some Jeffrey's tubes, and Spock is next up for drawing it out. But Spock has gone to great lengths to suppress his emotion. So
yeah,
aggression is not a pheromone he's naturally emitting.
Not a great person to delegate to this task, guys.
Yeah, maybe put somebody else on this one.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like Sam Kirk, full of aggression, and all he got to do was slam a door. Spock would be great at slamming a door.
You know, what's interesting about that is that Sam Kirk talked his way off of an important part of this plan by being the way he is.
Oh, yeah, sure. With those things running around, you'd count me out.
So by process of elimination, it had to be Spock.
But that does give Spock plenty reason to be miffed at Sam for putting him in this position, because what Spock does is kind of a prayer to take all of the rage out of his intellectual brain and put it into his heart. And boy, does it flow forth.
I don't need to do this. It just happens. And he starts like stabbing at the hole with his spear. And he really rages out on this thing.
It's really intense. He rages out so much that both Gorns start coming into the space, and Sam Kirk barely able to rescue Spock when one of them is grabbing for him. And it's one of those, like, Spock hasn't like completely chilled out yet. Like, like a police dog on a package. He's like completely going ape until Sam is like, come on, man, it's me. It's me.
I'm not sure Sam Kirk saying it's me is as useful as he thinks it is.
Not exculpatory.
in a scene that follows the one where Sam was a total dick to Spock. You could forgive Spock for wringing his neck and blaming it on what he did to pound that hole.
No, seriously.
He really gives that hole a pounding, doesn't he?
He does. It's no wonder T'Pring forgave him.
Yeah. So the group listens to the Duke Gorns fight each other to the death. And now there's just one left, Ben.
Yeah.
King Gorns.
Yeah, they beat each other up behind the door, and now La'an volunteers to be the final bait. And hey, you thought Spock had rage issues.
Yeah.
You ain't seen nothing.
Get away from her, you bitch!
It's kind of like a relay race of a mission, isn't it? Everyone has these separate parts of it.
Yeah.
La'an's part is a run for the cargo bay, where she seals herself into one of those boxes we've been seeing over the last few episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Big enough for kids, big enough for La'an.
They're great big cargo boxes.
Yeah.
She slams the door, and it's a clear window on it. And Hemmer is able to fire up an iPad that triggers a downward facing ice jet.
Yeah.
That kind of just shoots right down on top of this Gorn and makes a Gornsicle of it.
Yeah. And then when La'an pops out of her box, she just smashes this thing like a frozen pinata.
Why was it all yellow inside?
Because that was the Gorn's blood.
The Gorn's blood is yellow?
You don't want to eat that yellow Gorn snow.
No, you don't. It's probably going to impregnate you with Gorns.
Really do not want that.
Hey, so it's a happy ending. Everybody's super happy and excited and just back slaps all around.
It's Dead Chris sounds a lot like a fun variation of He's Dead Jim, huh?
It does.
I like that moment.
But when Hemmer comes out of his box, it's not good. Not a good situation.
Does La'an know this is Hemmer's fate? Did she know all along? This is my question in this scene, because I didn't think that was especially clear, but I couldn't rule it out either.
Hmm. Yeah, that's actually, I didn't even consider it, but she may have done the math on it because she has this experience. I mean, it's a little bit fucked up that she didn't tell anybody if she knew.
That would make her the bad guy in every zombie film.
Right.
In an interesting way.
Yeah. But Hemmer is real fucked up, and he's like, hey, so I'm going to go meet my maker. I've been talking a whole episode about how you like, when it's your time to go, it's your time to go. And that means you've done the thing that you came to do. So I'm going to go jump off a cliff. But before I do that, I'm going to give some parting words to Uhura, which is like, make friends and like, don't fight your instinct to connect with people, because even though, you know, friends and lovers will hurt you, the rewards far outstrip the benefits.
With the power back on the ship, Hammer hits play on the Everybody's Free to Wear Sunscreen graduation song and starts in on a couple of lyrics that he feels like will be very useful for Uhura on his way out the cargo bay.
Indeed.
I want to leave you with one last piece of advice. Open yourself. Make a home for yourself amongst others, and you will find joy more often than sadness.
Where? Sunscreen.
Before he walks out there, he does ask the group, does anyone have like a spare transport buffer? Maybe they could keep my body in until we're just absolutely sure I'm dead meat.
Mabenga, for example, do you have one of those like that recently got freed up?
The camera rests on Mabenga and he's just eating waffles, not listening at all.
He's rereading a copy of the Elysian sword fight or whatever.
I don't know what I'm saying.
I love that Hammer gets the wide shot. Like, we're close in on him as he steps out into the cold, but we're wide on the inside of the ship, and then we're wide when we cut to the exterior in the death language of Star Trek when he jumps.
It's a tough scene. I thought it was interesting that they cut before he fell out of frame.
Yeah.
It feels incomplete somehow that he doesn't fall out of the frame.
Yeah? You wanted to watch him hit the ground?
I didn't want to watch him hit the ground, but it's such a wide shot, and the ground is way below where the frame is, and you don't see it for very long. I don't know. It's a tough scene. It's very like, it's also very submarine film because, you know, there's a bulkhead that's closed and people looking through the glass on the other side weeping. It's very sad. You know, we barely knew Hemdog. And yet this was totally affecting to me. I was like totally teared up watching him go.
I was too. But do you think the episode worked hard enough to make the case that his death was imminent and the hatch was imminent? Because for this scene to work, I think you've got to I thought a lot about the scene in the Aliens movie where Ripley jumps into the lava, you know, as the baby's coming out of her.
Right.
She waits until the last possible moment to make this decision. Hammer, it appears, goes a lot sooner than that. I don't know. Like, I'm kind of split on how I feel about it because he makes his decision and it happens so fast that it is suggested that his death is imminent, but I wasn't sure if I believed it.
Yeah, I feel like I believed it more the second watch through. Like, the first time I was like, what are you doing, man? Like, they can for sure help you. And the second time through, it, like, the things that they were suggesting felt like they were less certain about them.
Right.
You know, like the doctor is saying, like, we can figure out a way to stop the growth, maybe, or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know why that worked better the second time, but it did for me.
Yeah. So up in space, we cut to the two ships.
Yeah.
And boy, the Peregrine has got that wall-eyed nacelle look.
Yeah.
You don't see a lot in Star Trek as a demonstration of damage, you know? I liked it.
Like, bent nacelle strut is a intense look, and it's getting towed home by the entrepreneur. And in the observation lounge, we get a funeral scene, and it's maybe mirroring a little bit the party at the beginning of the episode. It's a funeral that is, you know, like, hey, we're doing kind of a group funeral for all three of the people that died, but only one of them is going to get any eulogies.
That would... I mean, I'll be dead, so I won't give a shit, but that would be hurtful to me if I had to share the spotlight.
At Ben and Adam's joint funeral.
Yeah.
It just felt about me.
Yeah. That would be the final indignity.
Yeah.
I haven't been to a lot of funerals.
Lucky.
But the eulogies that really affect me are the ones like Ortega is doing here, like where you get to know the deceased in an interesting way, and you also get to understand the eulogizer in a way that relates to that person.
Yeah.
And I thought Ortega did a great job here.
Ortega did a great job. Uhura did a great job. I mean, Uhura's speech about Hammer having been sent there to fix people. And I mean, maybe Hammer should have pursued a career as a ship's counselor, not a not as an engineer, because it seems like he more fixed Uhura than anyone else.
It's wild. Like, in Hemmer's absence, I appreciate him more for Uhura's eulogy here. Like,
yeah,
his almost monastic dedication to his cause.
Yeah.
Like, that is, when stated, it feels very generalized, but when experienced, is just really powerful.
Totally. Not covered in blood, but also not wearing black for the funeral, is Nurse Chapel. She's in all white, very disrespectful.
Yeah, can't do that, Nurse Chapel.
It's like wearing a white dress to a wedding that isn't yours, you know?
She's definitely going to do that at Spock's wedding, right? T'Pring's going to be so fucking pissed.
Nurse Chapel's going to wear a white dress and a bra with 400 clasps.
How do you get the wedding ring on the hand doing the Vulcan salute? You really got to ram that thing down there.
Yeah, yeah. Spock, she notices, is clenching his fist. He's white-knuckling it through this funeral, and yeah, he stomps out into the hallway and starts punching walls. Classic toxic masculinity that, for some reason, Nurse Chapel is drawn to.
I mean, if there was a computer, he'd be throwing it. He's really falling apart.
Yeah.
And Chapel is there to put the pieces back together. I really love the shot sequence here, Ben. Like, down on his fist, shooting up, and then shot, reverse shot of Spock and Chapel. Like, the coverage of the realization of what's happening here, mm-hmm, I thought was really elegantly done.
Spock is really pissed about having had to let his rage come up to the surface, and Nurse Chapel is trying to be a good friend to him, trying to talk him off that emotional cliff, and also trying to do the, like, it's okay to not be okay thing. Mm-hmm. Like, that's part of being human.
Yeah, she tries to marin him the way you marined me at the top of the show.
Uh-huh.
Great friend. That's Chapel. But there's that moment after this hug, Ben. I think all hugs can go in a direction at their conclusion. And there's a moment after this hug where it could go in a different direction than where it does. But that's the moment where Spock turns away.
Yeah. And then she has like a little notebook in her hand and she crosses his name off. And then the next one on the list is Ortegas.
It's not happening, man.
So that was kind of interesting, I thought.
Here's a question. When Spock was on the ship summoning his anger, was it only anger that he summoned, or was it the full spectrum of emotions that he sent out of his brains?
Mm.
Because I think it's very interesting to think about which direction the show goes in the next episode with him. Like, did he just bring them all, or is it just the bad stuff?
Yeah.
Because he needs a hole to take it out on, Ben.
Yeah. Yeah. He's going to go back to his quarters and get out his T'Pring shaped fleshlight.
Jesus.
You know, sometimes fiancés will make those things for each other.
I think after you've been T'Pring, that shit hits different.
Yeah, it's like himself shaped fleshlight.
Yeah.
But he didn't think to enjoy it when he was T'Pring.
Yeah. Yeah, he got too busy. Back in Pike's quarters, La'an has found a lead on Ariana's family, and her intention is to reunite them. But Pike's like, what are the chances of that? And La'an's like, well, actually, I'm going to try anyway, and I'm going to ask for a leave of absence to do it.
Yeah, she's like going to go rouge to make this happen.
This is another scene where Pike's just the best boss ever, and he extends the same courtesy toward La'an that he gives to Uhura. He's like, look, do what you need to do. You can always come back.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give your job away. Have you seen Uhura fire phasers and torpedoes? Like, you're kind of the best at that.
She is whack at aiming. So
when La'an says goodbye, is this really goodbye? Because they really linger a long time in this moment.
I take the show at its word that it's goodbye.
Yeah.
Or goodbye for now. I don't know.
Guess so.
I mean, I'm guessing that we either are saying goodbye to her for a while, or the next episode will be we were taking everybody home and then this crazy shit happened kind of right. Episode.
Yeah.
Which, you know, either one would feel like it honors her arc.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The last shot of the episode is Uhura just kind of standing on the bridge seems like maybe making peace with her place here as a member of the Enterprise crew.
Yeah, she looks over at the station, which will be her career prison for the rest of her life. And the ending is triumphant for some reason.
Yeah, for some reason, this moment that is in many ways the end of her career, yeah. Right here, right now.
There will always be a place on Enterprise for Neota Uhura.
This isn't good at all.
It's like this and then a brief stint in a transporter room on Earth before she steals the Enterprise, yeah. And then goes right back to that seat.
The one moment you dance around with a bunch of feathers and this. That's what you got.
Yeah.
Wow.
Did you like this episode, Adam?
I really did. And not just because I like an aliens story, but because of its fresh energy that it brought to the thing. Look, like, Aliens doesn't own the market on this creature design. And much like most planetary bodies being icy, like statistically, I kind of wonder why there aren't more creatures that operate in the same way, like the wasp that lays its eggs in other insects, you know? Like, yeah. This is a type of beast.
I learned today that every fig you've ever eaten has a wasp in it.
Whoa.
Like, when a fig is, like, flowering, a wasp crawls into the flower, and then the flower turns into the fruit by, like, consuming the wasp.
Fuck figs. I'm never eating a fig again. You've ruined figs for me.
They're the xenomorph egg of fruits.
I wish I didn't know that. So I really love that the show was brave enough to go directly at something that I think could be accused of being derivative or stolen or whatever, because I don't think that at all. Like, I mean, laser guns don't belong to one brand of sci-fi, and ships that fly in space don't belong to another. And I mean, the Aliens franchise certainly isn't interested in continuing in any demonstrable way. Like, look, I'm honestly surprised Star Trek took so long to get here.
Yeah.
And now that it's gotten here, I'm glad that it's done it this way. I think it is a fresh take on this quality of Aliens. And having seen it, it feels kind of obvious. Like, yeah, of course. Why haven't we run into this before? So I give this episode and this series a lot of respect for going there. And I think it's one of the reasons why I like the episode. I think the qualities of the Gorns are distinct enough where it does not bump me at all. What about you?
I think I'm with you. Yeah, I definitely had that question in my head the entire time. Like, how much does it annoy me or not that this is right on the edge between homage and ripoff of Alien? And I think that where I fell is that it is homage when it is homage, and it's new and interesting twist when it isn't.
Right.
And it's really Alien through a Star Trek lens rather than Alien through a, you know, like the Alien universe is a, like, hyper-capitalist, craven, awful universe. And so that has implications for how Alien stories play out.
I think you're exactly right about that. Like, the absence of a Burke figure here is what makes this more distinct.
Right.
Like, this is from a purely, like, xeno-anthropomorphic perspective.
And you know that there's no Burke figure because they're eating bacon right at the beginning.
Yeah. That's how you disinvite Burke to your brunch right there when bacon's on the menu.
So without the offensive Jewish stereotype character, this is a much more palatable. but I think that it does bring its own unique flavor to it. And I was really amazed at this show's ability to say goodbye to a character that I feel this new about, but also I feel like I'm going to really miss, because I feel like we were just starting to get to know Hemmer in a way that I was excited to learn more. And
yeah,
to have a character taken away in a moment like that feels like a really brave choice on the show's behalf.
Maybe one day we will return to Vallejo Beta 5 and visit our old friend.
Yeah.
Whose body is in the ice, preserved.
There's a lot of hard hitters in the Bayo. There's a lot of hard hitters in Vallejo.
Indeed. Let's see how hard the Priority One messages hit this time around, Ben.
Okay.
Take them to the dome.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Ben, our first priority one message is from Jer Bear.
Hey.
It is to my brother, uncle to the boy.
All right.
Message received, but I fear that I've been kerned after binging all the new Trek everywhere and watching DS9 in parallel. If you hadn't got me into TNG as a kid, we wouldn't be spending scarves on P1s now. Hot take? Admiral Double Flasks to hide the double finger guns would have won the Dominion War faster than Admiral Belt Buckle. Kevin would agree.
Wow.
Ooh. I mean, I never cared for Admiral Belt Buckle.
Big Belt Buckle, bro!
And I don't think Jer Bear is wrong. If we're going to stack rank the admirals, you think Nechayev would have let that shit slide? I think it's probably Nechayev 1.
Is Admiral Nechayev? Are those Valerian canopies?
Admiral Nechayev.
Canopies in my ass. That's a rich cracker and chopped liver.
Admiral Double Flasks 2.
Yeah.
Admiral Belt Buckle 3.
Mm-hmm.
And my mount, Admiral Moore.
Yeah, I think Nechayev wins every time.
Yeah.
Against any of them. But I think Admiral Belt Buckle is in last place. In all cases. And
poor Admiral Belt Buckle.
I don't think we need any further discussion. I think you're right, Jer Bear.
Yeah.
Adam, our next priority one message is from Your Frog Prince. It's to Adam and Ben, and it goes like this.
God damn it! Fuck!
That would be fun if that were just it.
A last-minute business trip caused me to miss the Double Dumbass Tour in Seattle. I'm sure you were wondering who was supposed to be in that empty seat. Well, I was there in spirit. Love you guys. See you next time. Ben Meltdown Drop.
Fuck! Ah! Fuck!
Ben.
Go give it to you. He go give it to you.
Ben.
Go give it to you. He go give it to
you. Wow.
Wow. You know, I actually spotted a tweet from Your Frog Prince that they got tickets to the Double Dumbass Streaming Spectacular.
Excellent.
Right before we hopped on the mic. So I think Your Frog Prince is going to play a makeup game.
A lot of those old Seattle theaters are purportedly haunted. So I didn't necessarily think that was Your Frog Prince floating around. But
right.
Could have been.
Could have been. Just Your Frog Ghost.
Yeah.
Well, if you'd like to get a priority one message on the show, you can do it at any time by going to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you discover yourself an Edward Larkin?
Edward Larkin. I'm going to give it to Chapel. Got to radio up when baby Gorns start bursting out of chests.
Yeah.
Everybody needs to be made aware of the situation, and there's just no excuse for not having your communicator on you at all times in an away mission like this.
If you see Gorns, you need to say Gorns, for sure. I think this was emblematic of how scared she was.
Yeah.
I mean, Pike lost the thread, too. He should have put it on the 1MC.
Yeah, he should have put it on the glass.
Yeah. Yeah. My Edward Larkin is Mabanga, the waffle king of the entrepreneur. When you call back the waffles.
Yeah.
That was a really nice flourish there.
Yeah.
A very tiny bit of character development for Mabanga that I really enjoyed.
Mabanga didn't have a, you know, he's probably like sixth on the call sheet this episode, if that, but he really like hit hard in every scene he had, I thought.
Quippy as hell. Yeah. He was the quip king this episode for sure.
He really was. If they named episodes the way we name episodes, he would have gotten the title.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I am excited for the season finale of season one, and I hope we have some information for the folks about it in the credits for this episode, but you'll have to wait and listen for that. In the meantime, take it away, Wendy.
The Greatest Discovery is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. It's hosted by Ben Harrison and Adam Pranica, and it's produced and edited by Wendy Pretty. We've got one more episode of Strange New Worlds to cover. The season one finale is called Equality of Mercy. Just as Captain Pike thinks he's figured out how to escape his fate, a visit from the future shows him the consequences of his actions. Each week, we want to say thank you to Adam Ragusea, who composed all of the original music for this show. We recommend that you check out both his podcast and his YouTube cooking channel. And thank you to Bill Tilley. He keeps things fun on social media for Uxbridge Shimoda. Make sure you're following at Greatest Trek on Instagram and Twitter, and use hashtag Greatest Discovery to talk about the show online. If you're listening the week this episode comes out, we are planning a Q&A for after Strange New Worlds wraps up, and we'd love to get a question from you. Send in your question for Ben and Adam to answer by way of a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If you're interested in supporting The Greatest Discovery, we really appreciate that. You can become a member and get access to all the great Max Fun bonus content over at MaximumFun.org/join. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with more of The Greatest Discovery.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.